There comes a time in everyone's life where they just need to sit back and talk tech. And this is one of those times. I'm Jeff from Really Active, and I'm sitting next to Joey Chick, who's going to take you on a magical journey of techs and pods in Montreal.
Hey, this is Ian Jeffrey from Founder Fuel.
Bonjour, c'est Zoé Desroches de Founder Fuel.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Elon Sachs, the founder of the Founder Project.
Hi, my name's Connor. I'm the CEO of Weibo.me.
Hey, this is Sunil Sharma from Extreme Startups in Toronto.
You're listening to
Montreal Tech Podcast.
Le Montreal Tech Podcast.
Montreal Tech Podcast.
The Montreal Tech Podcast featuring Joseph Zick.
What I really wanted to do when I was in grade 12 was I didn't want to have anything to do with computers. I wanted to be a professional magician. And I decided that I didn't want to be a weirdo for the rest of my life, so I gave that up and decided to go into computers. But the U.S. figured that we weren't visa holders. And so, you know, they essentially told us to take our $1 million and go home with it.
Our founder Fuel aspires to be the best in the world. In fact, all companies come in on day one thinking they're, you know, the best thing since sliced bread.
Welcome to the fourth episode of the Montreal Tech Podcast. I am here via Skype with my guest for today's podcast. David Quayle is a serial entrepreneur whose first startup, Atasa, was acquired by YouSendIt in 2010. He also led mobile product for Y Combinator alumni Zector Inc. before they were acquired by Motorola/Google. A developer at heart, he loves hacking as much as he does any other challenge in starting tech companies. David Quayle, welcome to the show.
All right, thanks for having me.
So Dave, you actually ended up contributing to Tech Vibes, to the place that I earn my paycheck from. And to date, your article called Why Startups Should Choose Canada Over Silicon Valley, just the numbers, you got 811 tweets and quite a lot of Facebook likes. And from my estimation, I think 811 tweets translates to you're getting close to 9,000 or 10,000 people reading that article.
Yeah, it went more viral than I certainly anticipated it to go. It's funny because the day before, it was just a Sunday evening, and I was kind of reflecting on some meetings I'd had with some local entrepreneurs, and I just decided to throw something together. I was kind of just planning on publishing it on my own blog, and decided to reach out to Rob Lewis from Tech Vibes, who I know, and asked if he'd be interested in a guest post. And it was one of those things where, like, honestly, I've written blog posts before where I expected them to take off, and they didn't. And this one, I expected to go nowhere. And the next day, I started seeing the traffic that you're talking about. So it was interesting to see how it was picked up by everyone.
So Dave, I forgot to do my little tradition here, but so you don't have a beer.
Boo me.
So I'm just gonna crack open my beer here. And I'm gonna take my first sip.
Alright.
So Dave, one of the reasons, you know, I think why your article caused such a stir is because, you know, essentially you were stirring up shit over a very touchy subject in Canada. Everybody loves to argue about, you know, if we're just as talented as anybody else in the world, which I believe we are. So why don't you give me a little rundown of what you were trying to argue in your article?
I mean, if you peel away the article, really what I was saying. So backing up, the article's title was Why You Should Choose Canada Over Silicon Valley. And beneath all of kind of the substance of that article, it was really about why you should choose anywhere other than Silicon Valley. And even further than that, it's what are some of the negatives about Silicon Valley that people don't talk about. And, like, everyone talks about how crazy expensive it is, and it's true, like, you know, developers are getting paid $180K there per year, which is just insane, and if you're lucky, they'll stay with you for 4 months before they leave to their next startup. It's that's very well known. But one of the downsides that isn't talked about much is kind of what my article focused on, which is what I call the incestuous bubble of false positives. And so it's generally this idea that it's a double-edged sword, because in the Valley, everyone is such an early adopter. Everyone loves technology. Whether you're an entrepreneur or an investor or whomever, everyone wants to support you. And so you get this positive feedback regardless of whether your idea is great or not. And you just fall into the trap of thinking that you're onto building the next thing, and you allow yourself to get way too far along down the path until it's too late to pivot. And so the gist of the article was that in Canada, while the investor community isn't as strong, while we don't have like the ecosystem that the Valley has, at least if you prove out your idea in Canada or in Kansas City or in Detroit, in my opinion, you've proven that it'll scale nearly anywhere. And I guess what the article is saying is that if you prove your idea will work in San Francisco, you've proved that it will work in San Francisco, and that's it.
Talking with David Quayle of Zen Like Me here. Dave, what if I just called you a pessimist?
you could call me a pessimist. I mean, I think with that article is I was consciously stirring the pot a little bit, partly for effects, and just I knew that if you stir the pot a little bit, you're gonna get some good, healthy dialogue going.
Yeah. Now, Dave, your picture on Tech Vibes is looks like quite a young man here.
Well, thank you for saying that. I'm in my 30s though, so I hardly consider myself in the same class as a lot of the founders these days. It seems like everyone that I talk to that's a founder is in their early 20s or mid 20s. So,
man, I'm 24 years old, and I thought you were like 20 in that picture.
Yeah, that was last year.
So you've been blessed. You've been blessed with youthful looks then.
Yeah, thanks for saying that. Sometimes I don't feel like it.
Now, here's the thing about me. I publish a ton of articles with Tech Vibes every month, and one thing that I'm, maybe as I get older, I might get a little more comfortable with responding to criticism, but I typically don't comment on my own articles too much. I just let people say their say, and I don't really like to get into it. But what you've done here is you responded to a lot of the comments. You know, some of them were trollish, and some of them were legitimate. What would you say was, if it was 59 comments you got, what would you say was the gist of what most people were arguing?
I think probably if I was to have to pick one thing, is that there seems to be this sentiment in Canada. There's two things. The first is that there's a sentiment in Canada that your investors are kind of the keys to the kingdom, and that you need investors to succeed. And the second sentiment is that in order to succeed, you need local Canadian investors. And there's all this feedback about, you know, it's kind of like arguing with me and suggesting that it's unwise to start in Canada because our investors suck. My opinion on that is that, you know, I'm not going to argue about the quality of our investors. I know like a ton of investors in Canada that I would take money from on equal terms as investors in the Valley. But putting that aside, I just fundamentally think that we live and operate in the market for capital is global, and that money flows across the border as American investors chase the best deals, regardless of where they are, as do Canadian investors. And so this whole idea that as Canadian entrepreneurs, we are handicapped because our investors aren't as strong, it doesn't really compute in my head. And so that was probably more than anything, the arguments which I saw in the responses to the article, both like on that blog post and on Hacker News, and in my inbox.
Oh my, I didn't even consider Hacker News. You probably got loads of comments on that.
Yeah, I mean, you get on Hacker News, it's, you know, it's basically like Valley programmers, yeah, and snobs. And so in addition to the sentiment that you know, Canadian VCs suck. You get a lot of just, you know, you're crazy. Canada's cold. Canada's a terrible place to start. The only place in the world to start is in the Valley. So that was certainly a breeding ground for those type of comments.
Yeah, I liked how David Crow commented. He's you know, a pretty well-known VC here in Canada, and we've actually covered him. He's not afraid to say what's on his mind. And I also liked how a few anonymous commenters who would only post their first name tried to attack him.
I mean, it was pretty crazy. Like, you know, David's talked a lot about not blaming the system. He's got a really fantastic blog post. And, you know, I think his fundamental belief is the same, is that just you hear a lot of excuses from Canadian entrepreneurs, and especially, you know, ones that are directed at VCs. It's just, I don't know, it feels like an easy excuse. But incidentally, like, you know, it's funny, that article, when, you know, obviously got a lot of traffic for it, but it's been pretty surprising, the number of people that have reached out just to talk because of that. You know, David was one of them, so I've had a conversation with him. And then I've got, like, a number of people that have just contacted me about immigration to Canada and what it would take. I've got a number of people that are working on products similar to what I'm working on, that have worked with crowdsourcing, that have worked with AI, that are just, like, offering help. I've got a few, like, inbound requests from investors to chat, so it's, I mean, that's certainly been surprising.
Yeah, I liked one of your quotes nearing the end of the article. The real challenge, in my opinion, is to constantly be striving for a massive vision in an environment where few peers are doing the same. In the Valley, you're crazy if you're not shooting for the moon. In Canada, you're crazy if you are.
Yeah, and I mean, that's it. That's, I mean, when I go back to San Francisco and walk around the Valley, it's everyone there is trying for some crazy, ridiculous idea. And it's so true. And even talking about the idea that I'm currently working on with people, I had a conversation. Someone responded to my post, and they had their company sold, and they basically have done, like, a lot of work with Mechanical Turk. Had a conversation with him, this fellow, and he's, you know, Valley based. He's like, you know what you should do? He's like, you should try and reinvent email. You should try and create a better version of email that integrates with contacts and calendar and to-dos. And it's that type of thing that you get all the time from the Valley. And, you know, whether that idea is crazy or not, it's the fact that people always are trying to do something really ridiculous and trying for, like, a massive exit. And so your competition is people like that. And in Canada, I feel like oftentimes the people that are trying to succeed are trying to get their solution deployed at, like, a local Boston Pizza or it's something really local. And they're not really shooting for something big. And oftentimes you'll see companies that, or startups that didn't achieve that level of success and then just stop. And it's a very weird thing, and I'm not sure if it's an inferiority complex or what it is, but that culture is hard to, unless you're conscious about it in Canada, it's hard to avoid that. And so that's why I just feel like you really need to surround yourself locally or put yourself in competition with some global companies and to constantly be trying for something bigger.
Dave, where are you from?
Originally from Saskatchewan.
Are you a Saskatchewan Rough Riders fan?
I don't think you can live in Saskatchewan and not be a Saskatchewan Rough Rider fan. So I've lived in a whole bunch of different places. I've lived in Boston, Seattle, San Francisco, San Jose, Vancouver, Edmonton, and Calgary. And I think everywhere I've gone, I've paid whatever money I had to catch the Riders on TV or the internet. So yeah, I'm a huge Rider.
Nice. Yeah, I'm a big CFL fan myself, and I would love to go to it's Mosaic Stadium, right?
Yeah, it's Mosaic.
Yeah,
it's
I would love. So are you in the Valley now, or are you in Edmonton?
I'm splitting my time. I'm spending most. We're going to build this company, and try to take advantage of everything that the Valley has to offer and avoid the negatives. And so the idea is to build, if nothing else, engineering and design in Canada, and avoid, it's not just avoiding the ridiculous salaries that you pay in the Valley, but also getting really awesome talent in Canada, and then using the Valley for biz dev and marketing and for capital when it makes sense. And so currently, you know, we're very early stage, and so I'm spending most of my time in in Canada, and obviously, you know, I'm not an American citizen, so getting down there for work is, you got to be careful, you're doing everything right. So I'm spending about, you know, a week, a month down there, and the rest of my time up in Edmonton.
Do you know the guys from Login Radius?
I do know the guys from Login Radius. I think they're headed out to Montreal, aren't they?
They work in the same building as me, my friend.
Huh, hilarious. Well, they, about a month ago, worked in the same building as me.
Nice. Well,
you'll have to say hi to them for me.
Yeah, it's Sunny and Deepak, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, they're pretty nice guys. I think we'll be publishing an article I just wrote. They're one team in the new Founder Fuel cohort, and so that's kind of big news for them.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell us about Zen Like Me?
Sure, would love to. So kind of the big high-level vision of the company is that we want to try to create more free time for people by automating mundane tasks in their lives. So that, I mean, if you think about it, most software that's created now, it creates more work for you than anything. And so what we want to do is to use technology to actually do work for people on their behalf. And so that all sounds very abstract and intangible. So giving you a couple use cases that we have in mind. Actually, we'll give you the first use case, which we're implementing and really focused on right now, which is to give people, I would say, like 90% of the value of having an executive assistant for like a fraction of the price. And so it's essentially an assistant that will help coordinate your calendar and coordinate meetings on your behalf. And so from someone like myself who does a lot of externally facing meetings, you know, probably 15 times a week I'll meet with people. And it's the same process, happens every time. And I mean, you and I did this to set up this call where, you know, you exchange 4 or 5 emails with someone and it's like, hey, when can you get together? And you exchange your availability. And then finally you come up with a time and a place. And so someone's got to go and create a calendar request. And if you're meeting someone for the first time, you got to pull in information that you can find on from LinkedIn or Twitter or wherever else. And then you got to send that calendar invite out. And so that whole process really sucks. Doesn't sound like much, but when you add up the hours, you're probably spending like 10, 15 minutes on each one of those. And so if you're doing that 15 times a week, really painful. It's painful when you try to do that on your computer, but forget about it if you're on your mobile device. And so if you're just about to catch a flight and you need to schedule a meeting for when you land, it's like you can't do that. And so the solution, there's a solution to that, and it's an executive assistant. The problem with that is that executive assistants cost you $50,000 a year, if not more. Solutions like you can get a virtual assistant paid $200 a month. So expensive any way you dice it. And so we're kind of modeling solving that pain in coordinating meetings after how you would do it with an executive assistant, so that all you have to do is email your assistant and ask to schedule a meeting with someone like yourself or a contact, and they'll coordinate the back and forth and create a meeting invite out of it containing, you know, rich information that we can find about you on the internet. So it just kind of fits within your workflow and saves you time, kind of fitting in with the whole idea of automating that mundane task in people's lives. And so that's where we're started. We're like really focused on that. And you know, there's a vision beyond that to just become the real, you know, the best assistant that you can. So that hopefully that gives you a bit of an idea about the big vision and kind of what we're building right now.
Talking to David Quayle here of Zen Like Me, Dave, I'm just going to forewarn you, here at the Montreal Tech Podcast, we have a mascot. It's a cat who gets a little loud at times, so if you hear him, just carry on.
But duly noted.
What's that?
Duly noted.
Duly noted, okay. Okay, so you, I also want to know about Atassa, and you also worked for Zector as well.
Yeah, that's right. So Atassa was a company I co-founded. We co-founded right at about the same time Dropbox did, and we had like a product that was very similar. They applied to Y Combinator, we applied to Techstars, they got into Y Combinator, we had a conversation with David Cohen and those guys, and it didn't really fit with where we wanted to go, and so we ended up, instead of going to Boulder for Techstars, we raised money from some Valley investors at the same time and started building out this idea around, you know, making it easier for people to collaborate on documents. we iterated like crazy and ended up with a product that was kind of like a little bit like Zopni, where we were integrated within the flow of email, making it easy for people to collaborate on documents within their email clients. Built a whole bunch of product along the way, and then at the end of the day, got in front of a bunch of clients because of some business development we were doing, and it made sense to work with YouSendIt. And what started as a conversation with them about how they could use our technology to further their roadmap, their product roadmap, ended up in an acquisition for them just because it was such a nice complement to their technology stack and direction that they wanted to take the product.
And Zector, you guys got acquired by Motorola Google.
Yeah, that's right. So what Zector was a really pretty amazing technology where, again, it played in that whole collaboration space over files. And so their spin was that, hey, you want to share your documents, you want to share your files, but they had a focus on media files, so music, video, photos. And so much like you can with Dropbox, you can mark your folders as shared, but then they had some like rich clients on top of that, so that if you're on your iPhone, for example, you could get access to all of your music that sat back home on your home server. And you can, same with your photos. So essentially you turned your, 16 gig iPhone, you could get access to a terabyte worth of music. And this was, before the days of streaming, really. So, some really wicked technology there that was built up. Those guys are great. They're former YC alumni. And so just great technologists, great vision, visionary people, and it was great working with those guys.
Now, were you with the company while they were participating in Y Combinator?
No, I wasn't. So they graduated and spent about a year. It was probably under a year after they graduated that I joined to help them. They're having problems, I think, scaling the team, and so they needed someone to come in and help basically run a mobile product for them. So I came in and did that. I knew the founders a little bit beforehand, so it made sense to come in and help them.
Yeah. Here's where we kind of switch gears. What's one interesting or different or unique or crazy factoid about David Quayle that nobody knows?
What I really wanted to do when I was in grade 12 was I didn't want to have anything to do with computers. I wanted to be a professional magician. And so I spent about a year and a half of my life practicing probably 4 hours a day doing sleight of hand magic. I ended up performing for probably like 5 times professionally, and I decided that I didn't want to be a weirdo for the rest of my life, and so I gave that up and decided to go into computers. But to this day, if there's a magic show in town, I will go and see it and pay big bucks to go see it.
So what do you think about some of those, really famous magicians? Who's the guy, the big one?
There's Copperfield.
Yeah. What do you think of him?
Those guys, I'm just not like a big fan of the big stage magic, because most of that stuff is just, it's props and illusion. And it's performing art. But what I really love is like sleight of hand magic. So sitting at a table with like magician that's doing card tricks or coin tricks, that stuff is awesome, because that's huge skill. So you don't hear about those guys as much. It's not as sexy, it's not as high value, but that stuff is awesome.
That's very cool. So you grew up in Saskatoon?
It was in Saskatchewan, a little town called Gull Lake. Went and did my degree at U of R, and then ended up in Edmonton. From Edmonton, went to Seattle, and then Seattle, San Francisco, and a few places in between.
So you never lived in Saskatoon, eh?
Never in Saskatoon, no.
So you went to University of Regina. That, I know the Regina Rams, that's their team, right?
That's the Rams and Cougars.
And what did you study there?
I did my comp sci degree.
So that must have been after, that was after the magic.
That was when I hung up my wand and decided to use a keyboard instead.
Very cool. All right, well, you know what? I'll end this off on a little more serious note. We've been talking quite a lot about the startup visa lately, both on the podcast and even on Tech Vibes. It seems like a pretty innovative, charge, because everybody's saying that Canada beat the states in this regard. So basically, I just wanted your opinion on the startup visa and where maybe Canada can go from here in attracting some of these world-class entrepreneurs to settle in Canada.
I'm an absolute huge fan of the startup visa. I think it's like an amazing job that those guys pulled off. And I actually like, I've got some war stories from immigration with the U.S. When founding at HASA, we were three Canadians and we based a company out of Seattle. And about halfway through our company evolution, two co-founders actually got our visas revoked and had to go back to Canada. And essentially at that point, we had like $1 million in the bank of funding, but the U.S. figured that we weren't, proper visa holders. And so, they essentially told us to take our $1 million and go home with it, which just blows my mind. And so people that say that Canada beat the U.S. to this are absolutely true. And I think Canada is like primed perfectly to attract talent from all over the world. And I think that, it's unfortunate for the States, but they're gonna suffer from that a little bit. I think that Canada is, it's got a North American market, so you can test ideas like you could in the States. The other nice thing is that you've got very easy access to the States and to the Valley. And so if you're a team from Romania, there's no reason that you can't immigrate to Canada, whether it's Vancouver, Toronto, Edmonton, wherever, Montreal, and fly down to San Francisco for the day. It's so easy to do. And so, I've talked to like a number of foreign entrepreneurs and they're super stoked for that because A, they get access to like the North American market, and B, they get access to the Valley for all of its riches down there. So a huge fan of the way they did that. They're doing it right. They're doing it like they're ramping it up slowly. So I think their quota this year is like pretty small. And they did a crazy good job of like pushing that through legislature really quickly.
Well, thank you very much, David. And we will keep track of your shit disturbing articles in the future very closely.
All right. Appreciate it.
Will you come back on the podcast again?
Love to, anytime. I'll bring a beer next time.
Perfect, man. Well, thank you very much, and have a great evening, man.
All right, sounds good.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Saheb from Real Ventures, and you're listening to the Montreal Tech Podcast.
Music from this episode and other episodes of the Montreal Tech Podcast is by a Canadian band called Apostle of Hustle, and you can buy their album Folkloric Feel on iTunes. Okay, so welcome to the second part of the Montreal Tech Podcast, episode 4. We're here at the house of Ian Jeffrey. Ian, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Very good. Got to be kind of quiet, I guess, because the little ones are asleep.
They're sleeping well now.
Yeah. Great.
You saw how long it took to put them to bed?
Great. Well, it wasn't any different from what I remember I was like when I was their age, so. Great little guys, though. Okay, so Ian, glad to get you on the podcast. Cheers.
Cheers.
So we have a lot to talk about here, Ian. I want to get to Founder Fuel. I want to get to Tiny
Pictures.
Yep. Here's what I'm going to start with first. I've worked at a few jobs that probably weren't as serious as being the general manager of Founder Fuel. But I've worked at a few jobs where, although I enjoyed working at the job, maybe I didn't think that that job was the best company in the space it was in. And if some person were honestly to challenge me and say, do you think that your product is the best offered in the space, I don't think I could have said, yes, it is. But when I talk to you, you truly believe that Founder Fuel is the best accelerator. We had this little exchange a few weeks ago where you were just like, well, Founder Fuel is the best. You truly believe. And that's, I think,
your only ambition is to be the best in the world.
Okay, so that's, I would think that your investors and whoever's putting money into this accelerator program would be pretty happy to have a guy who, like yourself.
I mean, I'm not, I aspire to be or Founder Fuel aspires to be the best in the world. We've got, you know, tons of things to learn, and a lot to do, and a lot of iteration, but the ambitions are clearly to be recognized as the top-tier accelerator in the world, no doubt.
So the article we just published, I'm sure you read the paragraph where I said I think a lot of accelerators like to say they're quote-unquote international, but sometimes that doesn't go beyond just having a few teams that are from outside of Canada. So you guys are always kind of pushing, you guys are always doing improvements, and you know, now you're going to fly your teams out to the Valley, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's it. That's sort of the second major milestone that we've put in place to export Founder Fuel teams, right? So the first one was the partnership that we have in place with the CTA, which is a government program that allows Canadian companies to go work at certain co-working spaces in the U.S. A couple of those are in the Valley, so one's at Plug and Play and one is in the city in San Francisco, Rocket Space, right? And so, you know, we have an arrangement with those two that three of our companies per cohort can actually get free office space at one of those two for 3 months, and it's sort of part of our offer, right? So that was the first big step in trying to export our companies, and now the second one is the work that we're doing with the International Demo Day. I need to get that.
Go for it.
So the second initiative that we've put in place to export our teams is the International Demo Day that we're organizing with SeedCamp and StartMade, SeedCamp being, you know, the number one accelerator in Europe, and StartMade being, you know, somewhat of the equivalent, but in Australia. And so the three of us were actually introduced by AngelList, and we're using some new technology that AngelList is putting out, where you can actually, you know, to attend our event, you actually have to sign up through AngelList, which means that you need to have an AngelList profile and be an accredited investor on AngelList. So the people in the room will all be investors only, and investors that are interested by companies that are not necessarily based in the Valley, right? So there's a bunch of investors in the Valley that are starting to, you know, look outside of the Valley for companies, because really the internet has no barriers, right? And, you know, there are entrepreneurs everywhere in the world, and yes, the Valley is still, you know, the nucleus, the epicenter of all things startup, but there are people doing great things elsewhere. You know, Skype was, you know, it's not.
What was that mean?
I mean, some Norwegian country. I'm not quite sure which one it is, but you know, it was not a U.S. based organization, right? And so, you know, one of the big motivators for Founder Fuel, yes, of course, is to fund great companies, but it's very much so about stoking and fostering the Montreal ecosystem. And so part of that is connecting Montreal to the Valley, to New York City, to Boston, you know, to the cities in the U.S. that are very startup focused. So, you know, International Demo Day can actually happen in New York City if we want, or in Boston if we want, right? The basic premise for that event is programs that are not U.S.-based that get together to showcase their teams in the U.S.
I won't say his name because, I don't know, but a guy that I was talking to at the mentor day for Founder Fuel the other week, he was from NYC, and he was saying, I don't want other investors to know about Montreal. He's being protective about Montreal. It's his space.
Right. Yeah.
So maybe Montreal is getting a little bit better of a reputation.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting because, you know, a lot of angel investors, and I know who you're talking about because...
You know who it is, yeah.
A lot of angel investors, you know, want to invest in companies that are close to them because, you know, the bigger the risk, the closer they want the company, so they can have a bigger impact on it. So this investor in particular doesn't feel that way necessarily, although New York is not very far from here. But a lot of investors from New York wouldn't want to invest in Montreal, right? Unless the company moved to New York.
Yeah. So how many teams have you guys graduated so far?
So far we've graduated 28. There's nine in this current cohort, so that'll be 37 investments. You know, it's far more than any other program in the country.
Yeah.
We aspire to have 10 companies per cohort, 2 per year. Most programs out there are doing 5. And 2 cohorts a year, so like 10 a year rather than 20, but we are definitely going for the portfolio approach. You know, sort of thinking of the accelerator as a fund first, accelerator second.
So you guys changed from 25K and what was it, like 6 or 7% mm-hmm. to 50K at 9%. Like, was that planned all along? Because logically, you would want 1% as long as you have 50K to give to every company. Was that planned all along?
No, actually, the exact model that we used to do was 20K, well, actually, it was 10K for the company and 5K per co-founder up to 25K. So if it was a team of 2, it was 10K plus 5 plus 5, 20K. If it was a team of 3, it was 10 plus 5 plus 5 plus 5, 25 maximum. And that was for 6% equity. And, you know, what we've seen, because we're iterating just like all our startups are iterating, right? We try things out, we see how it works, we learn, and we adjust. And what we found is that 20, 25K is enough money for a company to come to Montreal, set up, pay their rent, put food on the table, maybe do a few marketing campaigns, but, you know, nothing major. And so, you know, teams of 2 were a bit of at a disadvantage, because if you had a team of 5, a team of 5 is going to get a lot more done. It's just logical, right? More people developing, product teams, more marketing, more everything. So bumping it from 25 to 50, the idea was that a team of 2 can actually hire a few people, a few freelancers, and potentially get as much traction as the company that has 5 people on board. And so the whole premise was, what can we do to help the companies in general get more done in 12 weeks? Because you know what? You know, the accelerator model is an interesting one for the companies. And the more we understand that there's actually somewhat of a game mechanism to the whole thing, right? Because there's this thing called Demo Day on week 13, because you know that on that date specifically, you're going to be exposed to a whole bunch of investors, you know that you need to show traction on that date, right? So we're seeing companies, you know, building strategies to make sure that if they're going to get a hockey stick growth, it's going to be like a month before Demo Day. Because that'll get the most impact, right? Because if you show up at Demo Day and you're like, all of a sudden, boom, hockey stick, and you're right in the middle of that hockey stick, investors get interested. And this idea of being able to hire freelancers and time your stuff according to where Demo Day is coming, you know, that's something that's possible now with 50K, which wasn't possible before.
Yeah.
Because on Demo Day, you want to have some form of traction. You know, and traction comes in many different ways. It can be user growth, could be revenue, could be partnerships, could be a lot of different things. But you want to have one as a minimum, and ideally a few signs of traction. Because if you don't have that, then all you're pitching is a vision. And a vision on its own is not very reassuring to an investor.
So I'm going to ask you a challenging question here. You know, I'm sure there's been teams who just didn't make the progress that you guys expected and they expected. And, you know, has there ever been any unnamed teams that just failed?
I think that anyone in my role that says the answer is no to that question is lying.
Yeah.
Because 12 weeks is not a lot of time. People in my role are putting a lot of pressure on the companies. They're trying a lot of stuff. And the reality is sometimes you just don't figure it out. And so, yeah, there's been companies that, you know, came in. In fact, all companies come in on day one thinking they're, you know, the best thing since sliced bread. They're all very, very proud because they've been selected. But you know what? At the end of the day, the only thing that it means that you're there is that we, Founder Fuel, think that there's something within them that can produce results. But that's it.
And you've done a good job of warning. I noticed you guys have done a good job of warning them that it's going to be a tough road.
But that's all it means, right? Is that we think there's something there, but nobody knows because it's, you know, in most cases, it's very early. Regardless of how advanced a company is, it's still very early. And, you know, there are companies that expected to do a lot and that we expected them to do a lot and they didn't. But you know what? That's part of any startup, right? Most startups fail.
Right.
They
it's statistically true, yeah.
Yeah, 80% of startups will fail. So it's normal that if you have 10 companies in a cohort or 5 companies in a cohort, 80% of those are going to fail. So which ones are they? We don't know, but they will. It's just the way it is. And those who succeed are going to really hit it out of the park. And we hope to have as many of those who hit out of the park as possible, but you know, that's the venture capital model, right? Most companies fail, and that's the name of the game. And I think that it doesn't mean that the entrepreneur doesn't know what they're doing. It just means that, you know, either this idea wasn't a good one, or the timing was wrong, or they weren't able to execute as good as the next person. There's so many things that need to happen for your company to be a success. You know, so many things that are out of your control, and you as an entrepreneur can only try to do as much as you can to line those things up. But
it must be cool for you to see, like, I'm sure you've witnessed some people just totally buckle under the pressure, and then I'm sure you've also seen some people like totally rise to the challenge.
Yeah,
which must be pretty sweet.
Because you know what, like, going back to this sort of game that is called an accelerator, it's all about demo day, right? Whether you like that idea or not, it's all about demo day. Because you come into a program, you're spoiled in the sense that you have money, you have every relationship that you can imagine, you can get to anyone you want, you've got experienced people helping you out, so you are spoiled, and you are expected to perform like crazy. And leading up to demo day, you know, you're getting ready for that day, and demo day is an amazing platform, right? It's an amazing platform for visibility, because everyone in the room, or everyone in a country, every investor in America is represented there. And so if you go up and you hit it out of the park, fantastic. You raise your money, you go on to the next step. But if you go up and you screw up, you burn your bridges in one shot. You're done. It's the nail in the coffin. And so, you know, when you're a few weeks away from demo day, it's like, listen, you gotta tell the entrepreneur, it's like, you've got 3 weeks to go. You know, what's it gonna be? Are you gonna hit it out of the park, or are you gonna effectively shut down your company?
Yeah.
And usually that kicks them in the right direction. They find a way to pull through.
So not asking you to pick favorites, but name one company that has totally inspired you after going through the program.
Well, there's been a few, and it's really interesting because, like, I mean, there's a couple companies, I don't think I need to name them, but they'll know if they're listening to this, that, you know, 2 weeks in the program, 3 weeks in the program, we were looking at each other going, oh my God, like, we're really, like, what a bad choice, right? Like, we really screwed up on these teams, and those two companies particularly came up on top at the end and really came on strong. But, you know, a couple weeks in, I mean, everyone knows the story about Oomph, right? Oomph, like, 2 weeks in the program, mentors were going, oh my God, what do you guys do? You know, there's nothing here, blah, blah, blah. And out of all the all the companies that have graduated from demo day, they were the fastest to close their round. You know, 2 weeks after demo day, they closed $500,000. That's the fastest. It's not the highest amount of money. You know, their companies have raised a lot more money than that, but they closed fastest.
And those guys recently pivoted and And
it's third pivot now for them.
Yeah. But, I mean, I don't know. You could look at that as things were going well, or you can look at that as a team that knew when to change direction when it was time and not be afraid.
You know? It's not being afraid of listening to what your customers are saying about what they want.
Yeah.
It shows a lot of discipline and maturity, I find.
From being around Notman House, I can say that there's a really good team. I think you guys have a great team there. And, you know, everybody from, you know, Steph and Zoe to the investors, I think everybody comes in every day and ready to go. So, yeah, you have a bit of everybody's different. You have John, who's pretty intense sometimes, and then...
Who is it that called him what?
Well, I can't say the person who actually gave him that name, because I didn't even name that person in the article, but yeah, John is the Gordon Ramsay of the
startup. Oh, you're not the one who did that?
No,
I thought it was you.
It was a former Founder Fuel team, but I can't...
I thought it was you.
No, it wasn't me, no. But actually,
he's more of a Simon Cowell than a Gordon Ramsay.
Yeah, because Gordon Ramsay's like in your face, whereas Simon just sits there and chirps. Yeah.
No, but Simon is more. It's not gratuitous. Is that a word?
Yeah.
It's not. It's grounded in something, right? It's constructive. Whereas Gordon Ramsay, it's like.
Yeah, it's totally. It's a
show. Just a shock.
Yeah.
And John doesn't do it to shock at all. He's. You know, he can lay it on thick, but it's always founded in something. And it's not just for the hell of saying it.
I was really proud because I saw, or when I went to this McGill event, Jonas Stern, he did his talk. And actually, in one of his slides, he said, like, oh, so one of our first investors was a guy named John Stokes, who was known as the Simon Cowell. And I was just like...
Simon Cowell or Gordon Ramsay?
He said Simon Cowell.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, you got a few different guys. I mean, JS is maybe a little quieter, but he has his own...
Well, the most quiet of them all is Alan.
Right, introvert, yeah.
Alan is quiet, and Alan is soft-spoken, but when he chimes in, it's like...
Everybody listens.
Oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know, it's always very, very... It's extremely insightful, always.
Yeah.
And JS can be pretty hard, too. I mean, everyone can be hard if... You know, this is not me saying this. This is what I hear from the companies that want to take part in Founder Fuel. Everyone wants to hear the truth, and they don't want it sugar-coated, because you only have 12 weeks and there's no time to lose. So if someone's going to come in and not be honest about what they think about a company and say, yeah, this is great, I mean, that's not helping the entrepreneurs at all. And so some are more... direct than others, but the companies want that. You know, they want to hear it straight up.
And John is straight up.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, so is JS. I mean, Alan is too, but in their own way, right? And every other mentor too is very straight up. You saw me on Mentor Day. I call it an old bullshit zone, right? Were there?
Yeah.
That?
No, it's that like, was cool. You really. I thought that maybe that was like just known. But I thought it was cool that you kept on, like, emphasizing that to all the investors. I thought they all came in there and they, like, automatically understood that.
Yeah.
But you made a point of saying that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, there's no time to lose, so they want to hear straight up.
I think one of his famous lines was a certain startup who was actually doing, like, pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you're under a fucking thick layer of mediocrity, or blanket of mediocrity, or something like that.
No, the word he says specifically is... There's something within you, but it's hidden under a thick layer of mediocrity.
So good. So good. But
that's in that video that I mentioned. It's in there.
But that's the thing, though. It's like, do you buckle or do you rise to the challenge? And that can be in any...
And those who rise to the challenge are those who get all the attention. That's what happened with Oomph, right?
Yeah.
They were going nowhere, and they buckled up, and they stepped it up and boom, you know, in 16 weeks they had $500,000 in the bank. You have to ask a few questions to Emma.
Emma, you guys lived in the valley.
Yes.
But you came back to Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
Was that an Ian decision or was that a together decision? a couple decision.
It was a couple decision, but I wasn't very ready to lead at that time.
Okay.
But we decided together that for our family it would be the best thing to be back in Montreal.
And you guys are proud Montrealers.
Yes, we are.
Okay. Would you like to have seen Ian start an accelerator in the Valley, though?
Whoa, that's a good question.
That's what I was going to ask Ian.
I don't know. It's such a different market than it is in Montreal, and he actually brought back in Montreal a lot of knowledge that maybe other people have back in the Valley, which not a lot of people have back here.
Yeah, and I mean, the idea of Founder Fuel was not my idea, right? There was always a plan to have an accelerator in Montreal in the Real Ventures 10-year plan. But before I arrived, it didn't exist, right? So I joined Real Ventures to do this. And so when I came on board with Real, there was only a brand name. There was a logo that I didn't like. And there was a Twitter URL. So the execution of what you see is my doing. But the idea of an accelerator called Founder Fuel, was part of the Real Ventures plan. And, I've been extremely lucky to have John Stokes, who was very involved in Seed Camp, which we talked about earlier, involved in Techstars. Alan was one of the founding partners of a program called Launchbox Digital in Washington. So I had people around me that had been involved very closely in the program. So very, very, very powerful sounding board to help me build, Founder Fuel and what it's become. So, yeah.
What do you guys miss about living down south?
God, what do you think we miss?
The sun.
Yes. Sun, Whole Foods.
Oh, you mean like the chain of...
Yes.
Yeah. Well,
I love it.
Beyond the chain, it's the quality of...
The food, the produce. Food. Like
the produce.
Organic stuff everywhere. Good wine, good food.
Yeah, yeah, lots of vineyards there.
Affordable wine.
Yeah.
Like, what are we talking?
Well, like a
good bottle for what? Like,
well, the thing is, we got into the habit over there of drinking, let's say, a $20 bottle in San Francisco.
Which here?
But that $20 bottle here...
$45 or $50.
Oh, nice.
So we come here, and now we're drinking...
Cheap
a $20 bottle here,
which I was using
to
cook,
which is like an $8 over there, right?
That's funny.
That we would never touch over there.
Yeah,
because it was, it wasn't very good. So now we've readjusted because we're not going to be spending $50 on a bottle of wine.
It's such a great city, and we miss for sure friends that we left behind.
Yeah,
a lot of friends,
which we see once in a while, but
yeah. But it's a great, it's very laid back, too, back in San Francisco in general, California. Everything is more relaxed.
But I've heard, Californians are a totally different breed of human than Canadians.
Yeah,
so.
You have to actually adjust, and Ian has a good story about that,
Yeah, I mean, we're actually more like New Yorkers.
Yeah.
It's an East Coast versus West Coast thing. I mean, you've been to Vancouver?
No.
Oh. Well, when you go to Vancouver...
Yeah, this is the farthest west I've been.
I mean, it's just much more laid back. You know, hang loose.
When you say we're much more like New Yorkers, do you mean like outspoken and just...
No, like...
Fast-paced.
It's got to move, man.
Oh, yeah.
Quick, quick, quick. Things got to get done now. And over there, it's much more like, chill out, man.
Let's go surfing.
You can take 3 days before inserting an email back and it's okay.
And the story that Emma is referencing is like...
It's a good
when I first got there, I felt like things were going slow. Emma was still living here, and eventually she came to meet me over there. And I go to this grocery store just around the corner. It's like an organic, a really small grocery store. And I get to the cash, and I've got my like my little panier or whatever with my stuff in there, and I give it to him. And it's hard to, on audio to explain, but like he grabs one item, and he looks at it, and he looks at it, and he's looking for the barcode, and he's looking for the barcode, and oh, he sees the barcode. Oh, there is the barcode. All right, I'm gonna scan it now, and then scans it, and puts it on the counter, and he goes through this every item like this. It's taking forever, and he's done like 10 or 12 items, and then he's looking at his counter. He's like,
"It's full."
Oh, it's full. So he takes a bag, and he's holding the bag like in his hands. Puts the stuff in the bag.
One at a time, making sure that everything is...
And then he puts it down on the ground, and he starts again. So I'm like, dude, take the bag, put it on the counter, scan the item, put it right in the bag instead of filling the counter, then taking it from the counter. It took so ever. And I'm standing there going, oh my God.
But it's like that everywhere. It's just very slow.
People do like...
Take their
serious
time.
Serious stop signs.
Wait till like, you go to South America, man.
I mean, like, stop. Like, stop.
I was hoping, like, the story would end in you just, like, totally losing it and then, like, being, like, dragged over there by security.
I was with two friends who were visiting from Montreal. And we step outside, and I didn't say a word. They're like, oh, my God, what was that? They were freaking out because it
takes
so
like
long.
Takes, like, 20 minutes to go.
Yeah, you go to a Maxi here, and you'll get some, like, 18-year-old girl who's just a pro. Just,
yeah, exactly. It's just
but she's
like
gonna
that.
Like crash everything you have to.
Yeah.
So
it's a trade-off. Isn't
so here's
it?
Another story. Okay, so the Californian government doesn't recognize the Quebec driver's license. You need to do a written exam and you need to do a driving exam. And so I do my written exam, I pass it, and I go for my driver's exam, on the road, right? And my French Canadian friends who've done it all tell me. Your stop signs, you need to do like really long stop signs because they will dock you a point. So I'm going in there thinking long stops, like very long stops. And so I'm driving and I'm like, all right, I'm stopping, I'm looking both sides, and I'm gonna like really being careful. And a guy doesn't say a word ever, he's just like turn left, turn right. And I get to the parking lot. And he's like, all right, so you burned 4 stop signs, you cut off 2 pedestrians. I'm like, what? And so I passed, because you're out like 10 mistakes or whatever. But I'm like, I didn't cut anyone off. Apparently I cut 2 people off, and I burned 4 stop
signs. So you're saying despite your best effort.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought the opposite. I thought he was going to be like, you took way too long with that stop. Like, there's no need.
Despite all the effort.
Interesting.
I still, yeah.
Interesting.
It's just a different beast.
Okay, so last little subject here, and we'll move on. We'll watch some hockey. I wanted to talk to you about Tiny Pictures because I listened to you telling all the teams about, you know, your experience, and it was pretty cool because I had never heard that. But
so the story there is living in Montreal and met this guy called John Poisson who started several companies now. I mean, we hung out a bit, and eventually he moved on to... He's an American who was here, and he moved to Japan. And in Japan, he was running an R&D studio for Sony Ericsson, and trying to figure out what to do with the camera that was behind phones. Like, this is like 2003, 2004, maybe. You know, it's a long time ago. VGA cameras and stuff. And in doing this, he came up with this idea, which eventually became... Radar, which is the product we launched. And he called me up. He's like, Ian, I got this idea. You know, I want you to come to San Francisco with me. We're going to build this thing together, blah, blah, blah. And anyways, it took a while. Finally, he got Reed Hoffman to do his seed round. Reed Hoffman, founder of LinkedIn. And Joey Ito, who's a famous Japanese-American, very famous angel investor.
Reed Hoffman is LinkedIn.
Yeah.
But there's a guy named Reed Hastings, though, isn't there? And he's Netflix?
Oh, maybe.
Almost positive. Okay.
It's possible.
Anyways.
So anyways, when I came around, when I finally moved to San Francisco, he was just wrapping up the A round with Draper Fish, Moore David Al, so Jeffrey Moore, the famous marketer. And I left Montreal with... My snowboard, my wakeboard, and one bag.
How old were you?
It was in 2006, so I was 28. 28. Left everything behind. I remember, like, being super stoked about going. Yeah, it's 7 years ago. Super stoked about going, and I'm in the airplane, or about to take off, and I just started bawling. I'm like, what the hell am I doing?
Really?
Well, I'm leaving my girlfriend, my house.
Okay, understandable. Yeah.
My family, my friends, leaving everything. And I'm like, oh my God. And I just like, but, you know, once in a lifetime thing, like, you know, moving to San Francisco, I'm going to build this thing. So anyways, get there, make a long story short, we built the first mobile photo sharing app out there. It was called Radar. It was way before iPhone technology, as you know, like 2 years before iPhone existed. There was no open source. There was
Facebook.
Facebook was around,
no
yes.
Pictures.
But there was no cloud hosting. You know, we had to build everything.
You guys raised a ton of money, though.
Yeah, so we raised $3 million A round, built all this stuff. It was before 1 megapixel cameras on camera phones. Every device was different. So instead of having one app, like Instagram had one app for iPhone, we had 200 versions of our app.
That's so insane.
So imagine what that meant for product development, right? Because you do a new feature, you got to rebuild it 200 times. It was a nightmare. It was completely a nightmare. And then we were the first to do video streaming back to the device. We had to build all that stuff. So our B round was an $8 million round. So we raised a lot of money. You know, by the time when we sold the company in 2009, like after the economy crashed, we had 1.5 million users. Most of them were U.S. users, and Shutterfly acquired us. It was definitely not a great exit. It would, you know, managed to sell it in the middle of the worst U.S. economy crisis ever. So that was a few, you know, pretty proud of that. And then we joined Shutterfly, and for Shutterfly we became the mobile and social team, which they didn't have at the time, and we launched for them another product called Wink, which is an iPhone app that allowed you to print
little
photo strips using pictures from Shutterfly or from your iPhone or from Radar or from
are you gonna pull out any
Yeah, I want to show you an example from Facebook. And, you know, you'd receive it in the mail. So I wanted to show you two things. So this is what you get in the mail. So the premise for Wink was, like, you were here, we're taking camera photos, and as a thank you, on my way home, let's say, I would create this thing called a photo strip using my photos on my iPhone device, and whether I had your address or not, I can send it to you by email, and you would just enter your info and you would get this. Let's open that.
So
I would send that as a gift to a friend.
It's pretty nice.
Awesome. So this could be on Facebook, that could be on your phone, that could be on Flickr. It didn't matter. And you'd edit it, reformat it, put a filter
and
on
you
it.
Can have strips.
Yeah, and you can, and a custom message here.
Yeah, this is pretty awesome. It's official.
So that's the second product we launched. And this thing here that I want to show you, this is 4 years of my life. So imagine all the pictures that you've taken on Instagram, right? So picture it, right? The powerful thing about, or one of the powerful things about Instagram, when you think about it over a period of 4 years, is that every photo is stamped in time, right? And because you're continuously posting these photos, it actually tells a very powerful story of what you've done.
Yeah, about your life, yeah.
About your life. So what this book is, when we shut down the Radar service, we were acquired by Shutterfly, right? And Shutterfly does photo book printing. So we offered up to all our users to be able to print a book using all the pictures that they've ever taken on Radar.
Wait, how much would it cost, though?
So this is maybe like $50.
And
so if you open this, so this is my life from May 2006 to May 2010, right? This is the first photo I ever posted on Radar. Second, third, fourth, fifth. So it's all the photos I've ever posted on Radar. If you go through it.
Without the comments.
Well, the comments, of course. But it shows, like...
Can I tell you something for a sec?
Yeah.
So before I got the iPhone, and I obviously, you know, I've had it for like 2 years, I had this one really shitty flip phone when I was like 18 or 19, and I probably have 100 photos in that phone that honestly I would love to like print out today. But, you know, I don't know, I lost the charger, and then I got a new phone. And they're still in that phone, and it's in my drawer. But yeah.
You're keeping it because of those photos?
Yeah. But, like, I think I would have to go to, like, the store and buy some cable. But, like, I really want those photos. And that kind of, like, resonates with...
But when I look at this, it gives me the chills.
Oh, that's you, Emma?
Yeah.
Whoa.
This is David Hoffman. He's the co-founder of The Next Big Sound. He was my intern at Radar.
Nice.
So this is like those are the cats. It's my life in chronological order for 4 years.
See, that looks more like you guys.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's a really cool keepsake.
Yeah. And so the last picture.
This is actually something that people would buy today because, man, sometimes I don't want to go and show people on my laptop photos. I want to take a book out of my case and...
And that's my bill.
But, see, isn't this a better experience? Pulling a book out and showing me and we're, like, flipping it. I'm also, like, I you know, I get the newspaper. Like,
yeah.
I can't e-read. Screw that. But don't you think...
But your journals, too.
It's, yeah. But don't you think this is a better experience than being like, oh, Joey, check out
your
MacBook? And...
But, I mean, I look at this is extremely powerful. Like I said, I'm repeating myself again, but it's 4 years of my life. Every photo I ever took for 4 years, it's in it.
That's pretty awesome.
So, you know, Instagram is great and everything, but they haven't unlocked that sort of... There's a whole wealth of things that you can do that they haven't done. All they've done is create a platform to share pictures with a filter on it, right? There's a lot of stuff that you can actually do with it.
So eventually the big decision then was to come back. Come back to the city champions.
Eight months after the acquisition and working at Shutterfly and launching Wink, Emma actually was approached by Mitelus again here with a great job opportunity. And Zach, our oldest son, was born in the U.S. He didn't know his family, really. It was all Skype. And that was a bit tough for us.
For sure.
He didn't know his family. And so when I went to San Francisco, it was clearly a move for my, it's for my career and my path, all that. And I always told them, I said, when we come back, it'll be for you. Because she's very career motivated as well. And so when Telus came around and knocking on her door, I'm like, I wasn't having much fun at this point in Shutterfly anymore. John and I had different visions for the product, yada, yada, yada. And I just said, screw this. Let's go back. We've been gone for 4 years now. Came back in June 2010.
Man, I sometimes feel guilty for being 6 hours away from, my 10-year-old brother.
Yep.
You guys had a child who wasn't seeing. Yeah.
6 hour flight away.
So that's pretty pretty intense. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Emma and Ian. You guys are the Jeffries?
You guys I mean, she doesn't wear my name. You don't do that anymore in Quebec, but yeah.
We're married. Yeah. 5 years this year.
Cheers. Well, yeah, let's do a cheers here to end off the fourth episode.
Thanks, Joey.
Thank you.